This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Hidden in the heart of the theory of relativity, quantum mechanics, string theory, and modern cosmology lies one concept, symmetry. Symmetry has been a key idea for artists, architects, and musicians for centuries, but within mathematics, it remained until very recently an arcane pursuit. In the 20th century, however, symmetry emerged as central to the most fundamental ideas in physics and cosmology. My guest is Ian Stewart. He's professor of mathematics at the University of Warwick and director of mathematics at the Mathematics Awareness Center, He has written over 140 research papers and many popular books about mathematics, including From Here to Infinity, Does God Play Dice, The Problems of Mathematics, and Letters to a Young Mathematician. His new book is Why Beauty is Truth, A History of Symmetry. It is indeed an honor to speak with you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Well, I guess it's good afternoon for us. I guess it's quite late at night for you.
It's 10:30 in the evening here, yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us late at night for you. We really appreciate it, and I've looked forward to this. Tell us, your book follows the whole history of this what is, in a way, a simple idea, but which really has come into its own here in the field of mathematics only recently.
That's right. The book takes a history which actually lasts 4,000 years, from ancient Babylon through the Italian Renaissance, through French Revolution in 1800s, right up to the present day with superstring theory. So it's a long and very interesting story, lots of interesting people, and the mathematics has a thread, and the thread that holds it all together is this idea of symmetry.
And so tell us what is the mathematics understanding of symmetry, because to the average person on the street, symmetry may just be, well, one side sort of looks like the other.
Well, basically that's the point. The familiar example of symmetry are things that where the left-hand side and the right-hand side look exactly the same. When you look at yourself in the mirror, you're seeing a symmetric object, butterflies, all sorts of creatures have this kind of symmetry. But mathematicians distinguish more complicated kinds of symmetry. For example, if you think of a starfish, five-pointed starfish, that has a different kind of symmetry. It's not just left-right symmetric, but if you rotate it into five different positions, it looks exactly the same. So over the years, mathematicians have learned there is a kind of formal understanding of symmetry, which is to do with ways you can take an object, or indeed something more abstract, and transform it, move it, change it. And the motion that you do, if it leaves the object looking the same when you've finished, is called a symmetry transformation. And what the mathematics of symmetry is about is not the objects as such, but the transformations which leave the object looking the same.
My guest is Ian Stewart. His new book is Why Beauty is Truth. Tell us what some of the mathematicians are doing then with symmetry and how it might relate to the theory of everything or physics or cosmology.
For about the last 100 years, physicists and mathematicians have understood that if you really want to know what the laws of physics are, what the deep structure of the physical universe is, you look at the symmetries. You don't so much look at the equations, you don't look at the mathematical rules, you say, what physical transformations leave those rules unchanged? And the obvious one that we all know about is relative motion. If you look at the laws of mechanics that Isaac Newton discovered, those laws are the same mathematically in different places at different times, and it doesn't matter where you are. And if things are moving at a constant speed, all of the rules look exactly the same. And so that's a very simple kind of symmetry. It says the laws of physics are unchanged if you change the place where you're working or the time at which you do your experiments. And it sounds very obvious and straightforward. It turns out to actually give you a lot of clues as to what the physics should look like. And more recently, Albert Einstein with relativity and then the quantum physicists discovered a whole pile of other different kinds of symmetry in nature. And the latest problem, of course, is to glue all of this together into a theory of everything, into a mathematical theory that kind of explains how the whole of the universe ticks. And, of course, we don't know whether this exists or not. But in order to try to find such a theory, everyone's focused in on the symmetries of the physics, take the symmetries of relativity, the symmetries of quantum mechanics, and somehow combine those together into a single mathematical theory.
Ian Stewart is my guest. How does this relate, perhaps, to fractal geometry or even symplectic geometry? Is that come into play here?
It does, particularly so you mentioned symplectic geometry. This is a rather unusual kind of geometry which mathematicians only discovered fairly recently. It's rather different from conventional Euclidean geometry. And the kind of motions that are allowed are different from the rigid motions of Euclid. You know, if you pick up a triangle and move it around, it stays the same shape. In symplectic geometry, the way you move things around is a little bit different. And that is the natural geometry of mechanics, of things that don't just have position, but also have a speed of movement. And so one of the most exciting developments in mathematics over the last 20 or 30 years has been the understanding of how this new kind of geometry underlies classical mechanics of Newton's kind, and also is involved in quantum mechanics. It seems to be the link between the classical world in which we actually live and the one we experience, and this rather bizarre world of the quantum physicist down on the level of atoms and electrons and tiny, tiny particles, which behaves in a very different way, but they have the same symplectic geometry. They have the same kind of symmetries at a deep level.
Ian Stewart's new book is Why Beauty is Truth, A History of Symmetry. I would also imagine that the whole idea of handedness, like the way a vine would climb a post or a screw, or, you know, folks who are left-handed or right-handed, also comes into play when we talk about symmetry.
Absolutely. In fact, that's one of the most interesting features of the world as we experience it. For example, you know, most people are right-handed, but some are left-handed. Now, the symmetry of the human body between left and right, my left-hand side looks much the same as my right-hand side, but in fact, I'm right-handed. I much prefer to do things with my right hand. So how come this symmetric human body prefers to behave in this asymmetric-handed way? And this is called symmetry breaking. And this is one of the mechanisms that happens in the way the universe seems to work, in which symmetric laws can have less symmetric solutions. The mathematics of how my body works is the same whether it's left or right, but in my particular case, the right-handed version is the solution that seems to work for me. For somebody who's left-handed, they are behaving like the mirror image of me. So if you put the two of us together, or between us, we're symmetric, but individually we're not. And this is how symmetry breaking works. It's one of the most interesting and important ways that different patterns occur in the natural world. It's about pattern formation.
And I also kind of find it very fascinating that there's handedness in the universe as well, in terms of the directions where the planetary bodies spin on their axes or the directions they take around their stars.
There's all sorts of examples in the physical universe where left and right-handedness comes up. As you said, in astronomy, it's a question of which direction do things revolve. The planets in the solar system all revolve in the same direction. In principle, they could go the other way. Actually, they don't. Now, why don't they? Because when the solar system formed, it formed from a rotating disk of dust and gas and stuff like that, which condensed out into the planets. And the whole disk was rotating. And it could have rotated clockwise, it could have rotated counterclockwise, but it had to pick one of those. The laws of physics would allow either of those, but the particular conditions to do with the way that gas formed in our part of the universe had it moving in a particular direction. And then as the planets condensed out, they were all moving in pretty much the same direction. The fact that all the planets are moving in the same direction around the sun is evidence that they all formed as part of the same basic process.
Ian Stewart is professor of mathematics at the University of Warwick. He joins us on the long line from England, where it is going on 11 p.m. at night. It is truly an honor to speak with you. If I could just sort of change the topic and ask you a personal question, were you always, as a child, interested in numbers and shapes and figures, or was this something that perhaps happened when you were in college?
It did happen when I was a child. It was probably when I was about 9 or 10. And my teachers noticed that I was one of these horrible kids who was good at math. It came naturally. And I enjoyed it because it came naturally. I could do it. Because I could do it, I enjoyed it. Everyone else was struggling, finding it really, really difficult. And it's one of those horrible subjects. Every mathematician knows that this is... If you just don't see how the thing works, it's one of the most awful subjects in the world, because there's no way out. If you're wrong, you're wrong. There's no arguing. If the answer is supposed to be 7 and you've got 6, the teacher doesn't say, oh, that's pretty good, that's very close. They say, look, sorry, it's wrong. Yeah. I escaped most of this by sheer boneheaded luck, I think. You know, I was just, my brain worked that way. And I like this stuff. And as a kid, I would go to the local library and I would get out the math books to read.
Wow.
You know, how sad is that?
Ian, what do you...
it was interesting to me.
Yeah. What do you recommend? Here in the States, we have a terrific challenge with getting American students really into careers of math and science. And what is your recommendation, whether it's a parent or a teacher, or how do we encourage kids to get in and appreciate more the real beauty that is in math and science?
Well, I think what you're doing at the moment, for example, here is math on the radio. Now, that's unusual. That's cool. That shows, you know, math is the sort of thing that actually gets on the radio. We have to change people's perception. Most people think that math is rather dull, boring, it's like accountancy, it's adding up lots of numbers. It isn't like that. I mean, there is a secret which we tell prospective students coming to our university. We said, we did a survey. We looked at our alumni, we looked at our former students, we found out how much money they were earning, we found out what degree subject they took, and we said, which subject should you take to earn the most money? And it was mathematics.
Really?
Really.
Because what? Did you ever learn why?
Because with mathematics, you can do almost anything. I mean, law and medicine come close, but for us, it was math. With mathematics, you can do computing. You can set up your own electronics company, which is how one of our very, very rich alumni made all his money. you can do, I'm a mathematician, but I write books. With mathematics, you can do more things than almost any other subject because math is very general. So this is the big secret, and this is what people have to understand. You know, this is a subject which is actually built into the fabric of our society, but nobody notices it's there because everyone's very careful to hide it away. If you get on your computer, go on the internet, you use your phone, or you go on a plane and travel somewhere, huge amounts of math are being used to make all that work. You know, somebody has to be paid to do this.
But my last question is, Ian, what is it for you personally that makes mathematics so beautiful?
It fits together in a very interesting way. It's a bit like being a musician. If you're a really good musician, you can play the music. You don't have to think about where to put your fingers on the instrument or, you know, how hard to blow or whatever kind of instrument it is you're playing. You can just get into it and make the music. And math, if you have that sort of mind, is like music. You can really feel it happening to you. And the most wonderful feeling in doing mathematical research, most of the time when you're doing math research, you are banging your head against a brick wall and you sit there thinking, I am not understanding how this problem goes. I'm being incredibly stupid. I just cannot see how to do this thing. And at some point, a little light bulb goes off and you think, oh, that's what it's all about. And that feeling of suddenly understanding how it all works is what drives me. It's worth it for that.
Ian Stewart, arguably one of the most famous mathematicians alive today. His new book is Why Beauty is Truth, A History of Symmetry. Ian, it's been a true honor. Thank you.
Thank you, Coy. Nice to talk to you.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.